All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire podcast. Football edition. Got to clarify since we're doing both at the moment. Of course, you know myself, Jeremy Moss. Matt Kennerly has been, we've been busy and I've been pre-recording stuff, so it's been a while. How you doing?
Oh, I am, I have a lot to do.
You are busy.
Yes, I am, but not too busy to you know, podcast every once in a great while.
Talk football in February? Of course not, right?
Still committed to getting the folks through the off season.
We will make it. So for those who are wondering who we are, MWR.com. Check us out there. Apparently some BYU fans, maybe Utah State fans, found an article that our guy Brian Swanson wrote about a month ago. Picking up some steam about, hey, why'd they leave the Mountain West? So if you happen to stumble across that article and then click on our link to listen to us, stick around. We'll have some fun because we talk nonsense. We will talk football February, March, April, May, June, twice a week during the season, maybe twice a week during draft season if stuff strikes your fancy. So any new listeners, welcome and give us a review. Dang it. Come on.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what platform you're listening on. I know that there's a way to review pretty much anywhere.
Yes, pretty much. And for some reason, we have two iTunes links, so leave a review on either. I don't care. I don't know how that happened, but the show goes to two iTunes links, and there you go. So let us know, Twitter, all that fun stuff, MWC Wire. So let's get to it. Here's kind of our loosey-goosey plan a little bit. We've talked plenty of draft stuff. We'll talk maybe a couple seconds of that tonight because, yeah, I've talked with Jonah Tolles. I've talked to Ryan McChrystal. I talked to somebody else. No, that's only two draft guys. So you want to know about Rashard Penny, Josh Allen. There you go. You get to hear about the New Mexico situation with Daniel Libet. So we've had a lot of stuff going on, but now it's just you and me talking next year because what else are we going to talk about? There's not a food bracket at the moment, is there? Can we fight about food again?
Not that I've seen, although we could probably make one out of thin air and argue about it if we get desperate.
I can say something right now. I'll say food, which people know. We both like the Mexican food or tacos, burritos.
Absolutely.
I think we can both agree. Maybe I shouldn't say we both agree. I will say, I saw on Twitter somebody mentioned about, like, give us a secret that you're embarrassed to say. Somebody's like, I've never had Chipotle, and I'm like, good man, good on you, you've never had it.
Yeah, I mean, especially around here, Chipotle is just overrated.
It's overrated anywhere, man.
Yes.
I'm just saying, it's like, well, I could say Taco Bell's better than that, but that might be pushing it. But I do like Taco Bell.
That might be pushing it a little bit. I mean, I like Taco Bell, but yeah, well, it's two different.
They are very different. So that's all the food talk we'll get tonight. But all right, let's get to it. Let's talk a quick NFL draft since we started at the top. So have you what's your confidence level in Mel Kiper between bald Mel Kiper and to what his hair thinks Mel Kiper really is with that top hat of hair he has?
Well, I mean, if you
that
were,
was weird.
If you're referring to him doubling down most recently on Josh Allen as the number one overall pick, I don't know, man.
Stats are for losers, and we have a T-shirt to prove it.
Well, did you happen to note that I think it was earlier today. It was yesterday or earlier today. We're recording on Thursday evening. Mm-hmm. Brian Billick actually came out and said that the biggest mistake that the Ravens made when they were evaluating Kyle Bowler.
I was going to say just drafted Kyle Bowler in general.
Well, yeah, but the biggest mistake in their evaluation was the same kind of argument that a lot of people are making for Josh Allen as being a high draft pick, which is, you know, blaming the supporting cast. And I mean, I think that there's maybe some, you know, there's some truth to that. Like, I don't want to say it's completely false because obviously it wasn't, you know, Allen was never helped by the fact that, you know, the running game in particular fell off a lot and they had to, you know, wait half the season for their number one guy, James Price, to come back. So I think there is an element of truth to that, but at some point, you know, a quarterback has to be able to rise above his competition. And when we, you know, we've talked at length about the fact that, you know, he struggled against, shall we say, suspect defenses like Hawaii and, you know, stuff like that. So still a little skeptical of Mel's point of view there.
If you want to get a good breakdown, go to that one where I talked with the Bleacher Report's Ryan McChrystal. I put a link in there. He does a full people claimed. I think it might be pinned on his Twitter account, Ryan_McChrystal. Nope, he must have changed it recently. But he did through people trying to accuse him of cherry picking videos. He did, you've looked through that, was there at least 50 tweets minimum?
Oh,
About him. So it wasn't just picking one or two things here. Go through, he sees, like, there's some people point out, well, he's injured that game. It's like, well, he's not going to know when every player, like the Air Force game, that's a bad throw. People chimed in who covered him. Well, that's when he's injured. But he went through enough throws. He wasn't picking just five or six from one game. He went through dozens. He pointed out good throws, bad throws. If you find his article or go back, like I say, if you go back to that podcast, listen to it, great. If not, I put the link in there to that Twitter feed. Go read through it. It's a good minimum 50 tweets, and it points out great stuff and bad stuff. But then also I'll say, like, the surrounding cast, like you mentioned Bowler and what people were saying about Allen. I will go back to this. If it was supporting cast in his 2016 year, it should have been way better because he had four NFL players on the offensive side of the ball. So I always go back to that because if it's a talent issue, how is he technically better this year than last year? So, But he has number one. But that's a good thing. Like, people say, oh, it's just talent issue. But then did you see the beef between Smart Football and some random scout today?
I did not. I haven't really been on Twitter all day.
I glanced at it a little bit ago because Chris Brown, who I think does an amazing job and good stuff, was trying to get called out by some guy because there's a Brian Pullian thing. He used to be the Colts GM, talking about Lamar Jackson should be wide receiver.
Oh, yeah, don't listen to that guy.
The only reason he's a good GM and on ESPN because, well, he knew Peyton Manning. He made the right coin flip call picking Peyton Manning over Ryan Leaf. Or I don't even know if he made that pick, but he's on the team at that point, or coaching or GMing or whatever. But there is some guy pointing out, like, the completion percentage. The reason I bring up all this connecting, because some guy's throwing shade at Chris Brown saying, you've done nothing. I've done this for 30 plus years. And one thing that was mentioned about, his name is Greg Gabriel. So I've seen him on Twitter. He has some weird takes. He's not a fan of Josh Allen because completion percentage, that's fine. But then he goes on to say, like, he's like, you can't have it both ways because Lamar Jackson's completion percentage wasn't great. And he says, oh, he'll be great when he does this NFL. It's like, well, it's just kind of, you can't have it both ways. That's my point. If you're throwing 56%, I know offenses are different in talent, but you can't say one guy's going to be great because he played in offense A compared to offense B, but their stats are nearly the same in completing the ball because I know Allen went down the field a bit more, so that can make it more difficult, but I don't know. It's just go read that little Chris Brown Smart Football on Twitter. It's kind of interesting them going back and forth because he's written multiple books about it, and nearly anybody you go about talking with him or if you ever heard him, he knows what he's talking about. And so it's like, yeah, don't listen to Brian Pullian about whatever, Lamar Jackson. He should be a good quarterback. But to Allen, it's like they both complete about 57% of the passes, and the team will take them number one or top 10. But I don't know. That's weird. I don't know what I'm doing here.
Well, I mean, first of all, yes, you should go buy Chris Brown's books. If you want to be a more enlightened football fan, you have to go buy his books.
Yes.
But, I mean, maybe we should just mention it now. I mean, I'd love to get, you know, an expert pair of eyes. But, like, as we're talking, as I'm listening to you talk, I went to draftbreakdown.com. And I just feel like at a minimum, you know, if you're skeptical of what one side or the other, you know, side of the argument is trying to make, you know, go look at the video for yourself. You know, it's all there at Draft Breakdown. And so, like, right now I've been watching the Colorado State review. And, you know, on one play, you could see him, you know, making a 20-yard strike, like, perfect. And then on the next play, you can see him throwing a swing pass 5 yards over the running back's head. So, I mean, you know, there's an element of truth, I think, to both sides of the argument. And I think that, you know, I wish I were more well-trained than I actually am. Like, I don't "quote unquote," watch the tape. Like,
so, basically, this: who should we
do for a living?
Who should we get on that does it? Because I've had a few guys who people like, oh, this guy just does it for some random website.
I would love to get Doug Farrar because that's a guy who, you know, I believe he works for NFL 1000. I think he's over at Bleacher Report.
Yes, I
forget exactly where it's repeated.
I possibility may have his phone number. I'll look and see.
I would love to know what his opinion is. You know, having looked at the tape, because that's a guy that I've trusted for a long time.
Okay. There's a lot of people we can get out. Like, Daniel Jeremiah does a good job. There's a few people who I could have contacts to. Who knows, from when I used to do sports radio stuff. But I might have Doug's info. But if you want him on, we'll do our best to. Because I want as many people as possible. Because it just depends. Like, everybody I spoke with, like, even when I spoke to Jonah Tulls, we talked mostly with Rashard Penny. He thinks, like, Josh Allen's like a third or fourth round pick because of not necessarily where he'll be picked, but talent-wise. But we all know quarterbacks get overreached anyway. So, if your quarterback gets taken at pick number 15 to the Cardinals, they need a quarterback. That doesn't mean he's like, well, he technically is a first-round pick, but it's the most important position. So that's why you'll see, like, Lamar Jackson moving up. you'll see maybe a few other quarterbacks move up higher than where you think they should be drafted. Like, remember, Garrett Grayson, Colorado State a few years ago, was supposed to be the next guy after Drew Brees, a third rounder. Was he with the Bears or practice squad or something? Mm-hmm. So it's like quarterbacks get lifted up. So when the guy goes, always a third round talent, but he does clarify he'll probably be a first round pick because it's a quarterback needy league. You want the next great quarterback. So I do want to find a guy who does this all the time. Maybe one of the guys from Pro Football Focus, they look at more advanced stuff, which is different than actually watching the game. To a degree, it's just, like we always say, a piece of the puzzle. But what is there to say? It's like he's going to be picked high. Like, also, if it's a talent thing, how much talent's on Cleveland? Is he going to chuck it to Josh Gordon every time?
That's a good question.
So that's my point. Like,
well, assuming Corey Coleman is healthy,
yeah, he
could
too.
He could make something happen. I mean, maybe we could leave it at this and then move on as far as Allen is concerned until we inevitably talk about him again.
Hey, next week?
I guarantee you there's no other quarterback in this year's draft class that makes a 15-yard out look as easy as he does and makes a swing pass look as hard as he does. I think that says everything you have to say, because I'm still watching this Colorado State review and I'm seeing a lot of the same things. You can see the plays that make you go, wow. And then you see the plays that where you just like shake your head.
Did you see him today? I think it's from his QB coach or whoever he's working out with in California. He pulled a Jamarcus Russell with Dante Culpepper, throwing it off his knees like 50 plus yards.
I did, and I saw someone joke that it was supposed to be a 5-yard slant.
That's going to my quick post I'm going to do. It's just supposed to be this play. That's a good one. That is a high-quality Twitter joke there. But the other surprise, I guess some people aren't surprised, but let's move on to the guy apparently we hate, the defensive player of the year in the Mountainless Conference from last year.
Well, not anymore. We've seen the error of our ways.
Yes, Leighton Van Der Esch in same Kuiper draft, and we'll talk about other drafts, but this is, I think, the most recent and well-known. Obviously, people know who he is. He has a pick together to, was it the Pittsburgh Steelers? Is that correct?
I feel like if he went to Pittsburgh, he would be like every other linebacker that they draft, and he'd just be like a Pro Bowler within 3 years and then just be, you know, a good, great linebacker for the next decade.
It's like what Porter does, who's now with the, what does he get? Wade, or not Porter, but yeah, was it Joey Porter, James Harrison, that type of guy?
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't watch that much NFL football this year. I kind of wish I knew whether, off the top of my head, whether Van Der Esch played the same position as Ryan Shazier. But I mean, I know that Shazier's, you know, was very highly, I went to behind the steel curtain over at SB Nation. He says, you know, inside linebacker is an obvious need who will have to replace Ryan Shazier. So there you go.
And Van Der Esch also played, he didn't really play one. Well, I guess he did play the one. I think it's somebody else to get two guys mixed up, but he's just a guy that just makes plays. And every, like, remember reading up on him coming out of, like, recently, like, oh, high school, he was, had to gain like 40, 50 pounds, didn't really play until a couple years in college. He always seems to get better. And then a couple of guys like from Idaho Press and, oh, he could be a first round pick. I've seen him second or third, but this is the, I think there's another mock draft that had him in a first round as well. So he, it'd be 28 to Pittsburgh. And yeah, it looks like, replace obvious need for Shazier. So,
I mean, if he's like 90% of Bobby Keekly,
there you go.
He's a Pro Bowl caliber player in that system, probably.
Let me ask you this: with I think he could be a first round. It's also team needs, so it's like, it's just, and linebacker too is a deep position as well. There's some people saying they're surprised he was taken that high, not because of talent, because of how great the linebacker class is expected to be for this this year's draft. So it's also like, if you're a first rounder, sort of, it not luck, but it's also need and also how good you are. And Pittsburgh has a need, and he's a pretty good guy. But let me ask you this question, because we have a couple other guys kind of shooting up the draft boards a bit. You got Michael Gallup, CSU wideout, Rashard Penny, who, like, people are saying, like, a top five running back, maybe top three, I think. The guy spoke with Jonah Tolles, had him four. He's over at ndtscouting.com, so you can go read his stuff there. Mel Kiper had a conference call, put him at third. There could be a small chance, like, those two guys. I've seen Gallup maybe being a first-round pick. I've seen Penny getting very close. If you were to put now, end of February, over under, how many first round picks will it be come in 2 months?
Okay. I feel like this.
Is 1.5 too risky? You just go under?
No. I mean, if we're talking 1.5, I would go over, because I think there's going to be at least two. Okay. To me, the question is whether, you know, someone like Gallup or Penny is going to sneak into the back of the first round. I think that Gallup is probably a little more likely, if only because of the way that running backs have generally been drafted the last few years. You know, I think, you know, there's no shame in slipping to the second round and then, you know, becoming a rookie of the year like Kareem Hunt did. You know what I mean?
Yeah, third rounder, yeah.
I feel like the best bets at present are definitely Allen and Vander Esch. And then I would put Gallup, I mean, if it were me, I would put it at like 60-40 that he's a first round pick.
Okay, because right now here's how, because I have it up here, Kuiper. It's insider, so if you don't have it, I'm giving away content for what you pay for, whatever. Saquon Barkley is a first rounder to the Giants, or who could take a quarterback as well. Then you have Ronald Jones from USC. There's two. There's, I think, what, three running backs in the first round, and about as many wide receivers. And so it also, again, it always goes back to who needs what team. Like Detroit needs a running back, that'd be a good fit. We mentioned a couple teams like Raiders could be a good fit for like Rashard Penny. But Raiders pick was somewhat high. So you got like, yeah, Ronald Jones there, sorry, to Tennessee. You have, who's the other guy? Darius Geis from LSU over to Detroit. So a handful of running backs, handful of receivers. I see a decent, like the Patriots could be a decent fit for Penny, but probably not for a first round pick.
Yeah, I mean, for the Patriots, you said.
Well, I'm just saying they always use a million different running backs.
That's true, but they very rarely draft a running back very
Because they
high.
don't need to, so I'm just saying, if they wanted the guy who fits what they want to do, who can play multiple positions, he can catch the ball, he can return kicks and punts. They want versatile guys like, hey, who they got, Deion Lewis and a few other guys back there who they seem to rotate in every other year. But I don't know. You got and Gallup could go to the Eagles. They need a wide receiver, I think. That could be a position they need. But I don't know.
I kind of hope that he like falls to day two and the 49ers are able to grab him early on day two.
For which player?
Michael Gallup.
So you have Michael Gallup, Jimmy Garoppolo, and whoever they take running back they'll take in the first round, right?
I don't think they take it. I don't think they're going to take a running back at the first round. I think they're
Yeah.
probably happy with Carlos Hyde and Matt Breida.
Okay, I heard some people saying like Saquon Barkley. I'm like, that's kind of weird. Busty won't be there at 9 anyways. That's what I'm saying. That's what I've been hearing and seeing. One last thing about NFL stuff, because I thought this was very interesting. I listened to the Around the NFL podcast. I think it's pretty funny and entertaining, because it's not just, some podcasts are boring. Maybe we are. I don't think we are too much, but they joke around a bit. It's not just like a TV show for a podcast. They actually have jokes and chat and are real people. So they brought up a hypothetical. The reason I bring it up, because it could impact Josh Allen. And this is not the Alex Smith deal or where Kirk Cousins can go. But they brought up an idea which could have a huge impact, is that Cleveland should trade their first and four to Indianapolis for Andrew Luck, which would be a huge thing for like Josh Allen, perhaps, since everybody has him going to the Browns. I know you don't, not a huge follower of the NFL as much as probably those guys or most, well, you know what I mean, just we do college stuff. Would that even intrigue you at all? Like, how would you feel about that with impact, like where Josh Allen could go or anything, or just in general for that trade? Would that be a nutso trade to do?
If I were Indianapolis, I would make that trade in a heartbeat.
You would?
I
Okay.
would, because what do we know about Andrew Luck's health at this
Well, I mean,
point?
that's the
Do
point.
we know
Cleveland.
for sure that he's back to 100%?
That's the point on their end, too. If Cleveland's going to do it, they'd want to know they're having a guy who's structurally fine. Because if they have 1, 3, and 4, they could take Josh Allen. He could go to Indianapolis at number one.
Yeah.
I'm saying, what's the last time? Three of the top four picks? That'd just be crazy. I just brought it up because how insane it was. And
Oh,
because
yeah.
I don't think that would ever happen, but if he's healthy, like my point about Cleveland, if Josh Allen goes there, because we'll bring it back to him and move on to something else, there's only so many rookies you can have, and who cares if you have 10, t 10 of the first 10 draft picks are still rookies. You can't have a million draft picks. You actually have talent on your team, like proven talent. And so that's kind of why I brought that up, because they don't need all these picks they have, really. They could leverage these into something if they can get Luck, or get if Kirk Cousins would go there, if they're to pay him enough money as a free agent. It's just a way where, how else could Allen go? Not that I don't care if he goes to Cleveland or not, it's a tough go, but you want talent around you, and they don't have talent. But ideally, like with Allen, like if he goes to the Giants, if he goes to, I see the people, some people have him going to Pittsburgh, I see a few places have him going to Arizona, where they'll probably get another QB, but there's a few places, like maybe even the Chargers, because Philip Rivers isn't going to be there forever. Maybe somehow to the Saints, because Drew Brees. I think that would be the best fit, best place for him to go, but, or at least best places, I should say.
Well, I guess we'll have to keep speculating for the next 2 months.
because that's what we've got the combine coming up next week. So we can, first off, we'll see his actual height and weight again, hand measurements. Because if you have big hands, you're a good quarterback. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, what I'd like to do is kind of what we did last year, and I think the year before that. What I'd like to do after the combine is talk about it in terms of mock draftable, because I feel like that's a really interesting thing to look at.
I remember that. We'll definitely do that. So let's move on. There's a little bit of news going on in college football for obviously a little bit. We'll talk about New Mexico really quick. Again, if you haven't heard me talk to Dane a little bit, go do it, because it's amazing. He's been on top of it over at nmfishbowl.com. He's been basically he's a former political reporter of being a thorn in the side of Lobo's administration, and fans think he's an idiot, which he's not, because he's been 95% accurate on all this. But look, Bob Davie suspended for 30 days. They do have an interim coach. And you know what the most interesting thing I found about Bob Davie, which I didn't know? You know, we give him credit a little bit, like, oh, he's a defensive coach, he does this. He's basically the CEO head coach. So basically, I was reading through some stuff. Doesn't coach the offensive team or game plan. Doesn't coach the defensive game plan. Some head coaches have a position coach. He doesn't coach a position either. He just sits out there basically to yell loud.
So he's basically Herm Edwards before Herm Edwards.
I would give Bob Davie a head up, because I think Bob Davie can recruit more than Herm Edwards, realizing, hey, I got to talk to the parents. I got to convince parents. Do I have to grovel to parents? What is this? That's going to be the worst decision they've ever made, Arizona State. Worst decision ever. You can prove me wrong, or is that correct?
No, I mean, I think it's going to be an adventure.
It is. But with the Lobo, so Davey's out. They're having a new offense coming in. The main thing I want to talk about, which is kind of a jokingly thing, because he can't, as we mentioned that past show, he can't really be fired for cause because of a technicality, which basically means outdated rules, which, yeah. So if you haven't heard what he's done, he's basically alleged, like, sexual assault by players, where he said in a team meeting report, allegedly, I'll say that a million times because it's not, he hasn't said anything for truth because he hasn't been interviewed, wanted to get dirt on the girl to protect the football players. He wants to be in, pull a, not to be crude, but like the Penn State thing. Well, the coach will take care of it. The coach will take part in an investigation. Like, does Bob Davie have time to do an investigation? Does he know how to do an investigation?
Well, if he's not coaching, maybe he does.
I guess you're right. If he's just yelling.
If he's not directly overseeing people, maybe he does have the time to do something like that.
Good point. But it's stuff like that, like, oh, this person's not credible because she's talking smack on a Snapchat video, or you've heard of stuff like he got in a visible fight with the guy on the sideline who might have had a concussion. It's a lot of stuff where it's kind of like the Larry Stacey thing. It's like, there's this stupid guy on Twitter who's trying to get us in trouble or get me in trouble, who's dumb. I'm not going to give him any credit. You know who he is if you followed me on Twitter. But basically, I told this to Eli in the basketball show, and maybe you'll agree or not with me, Matt, but I play Division I athletics. I know the difference between being yelled at just because your coach is pissed, or maybe he'll even throw a clipboard across the, like, on the ground, like nowhere near the direction of player, just throw, slam something down. I can get behind that, but I think with Davie and even Eustace a little bit, it's more directive at you. That is different than just randomly, because it's for water polo. We'd sometimes go underwater because we kind of chuckle and the coach would go crazy, like just start yelling, because it'd be out of the blue. It'd be like he's blah, 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 and just, you guys swimming too slowly, or being lazy. It's we still got an hour off to practice. That's different than me getting in your face, Matt, and saying you're a freaking loser and you're terrible. And I think there's a difference, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Because you can yell and be an effective coach, but you can't kick basketballs toward the guys. Look at the guy at Rutgers, Bob Knight. We've seen a million different things go out like this. So that's my, I've said a million times, that's, I think that's a fair opinion. You can yell and motivate without having to be intimidating or directive at those type of players. That's where I think it gets crosses the line, when you're in their face. Like, you can even go up and tell a guy, like, hey, what are you doing? But you can't just go in his face and swear at him just because. I don't know.
I mean, just and just approaching it as like a person-to-person kind of exercise, like, yeah, that kind of communication is just really regressive. It's just really toxic.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like, yeah, maybe it's the kind of thing that works in the short term. You know, maybe that does deserve a little bit of credit. I have no idea or not, but maybe it does deserve a little bit of credit for the surge that they had in the win column the last couple of years. But I feel like that's the kind of thing where, you know, that kind of intensity, that kind of negativity, whatever you want to call it, it's going to burn out its welcome one way or the other. And maybe that's what we're starting to see right now.
Well, there's that. And then also, like, I've been in workplaces, like, well, yes, I'll say professional, where there's like it's allegedly professional, supposed to be, where yelling in meetings. I had two guys who I worked with at a radio station. They were not allowed to be near each other. They moved guys' offices across the building so they would not have to cross each other's paths because of how bad it was between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And part of it's like, again, if your motivational tactic is to get mad, that could work sometime. But if you do it all the time, who cares? Like, who's going to listen to you? If your go-to is yelling in somebody's face, you're just going to tune them out, like you said. Nobody's going to pay attention. So Davey just seemed like – but you got to give him credit too. Like, he stood up for the guys who, during the national anthem, got played at halftime. The guys who kneeled and didn't do what most people could typically do. That's fine. He actually got some guy in the area, took away his courtesy car because he wanted to kick those guys off the team who kneeled during the anthem. So he does do a few good things, but it just seems like you got to – knowing to play that card, and you can't just. I think with Davey, it's worse because he's actually had to change stories and injured a player. Broke the guy's, or Davey broke his hand, got in a fight, or covering up alleged rape or sexual assault. And the only reason he got dropped because the girl left town and left school. That's the only reason that case got dropped from the reports. So, but do you think he'll be the coach next year in September? Because I talked to Daniel, he thinks at minimum he'll be the coach through the first month of next year.
I mean, I tend to be a little bit pessimistic about those kinds of things. So if you ask me now, I would probably say no.
That's what I thought because too.
I feel like it's the kind of thing where, you know, if some of the allegations turn into something more significant than just allegations, you know, to me at a certain point, there's the temptation to just kind of rip it off like a Band-Aid and just move on to the next head coach or something like that. So, you know, while obviously there's a lot of moving parts to this entire story, I do kind of think that in the long run, you know, with these kinds of things, I tend to take a pretty dim view. So I do think there'll be a new head coach.
I think the reason there might not be because of money, because they're bleeding money. They've had issues with just money in general because they're any mountain of school, essentially, where they're not getting the pay equal to even like, not even, but like even BYU gets about $10 million a year. They're getting like maybe two. And so if you got a fire coach, you're already having to have money forgiven from the university to athletic program. You're going to be able to pay Bob Davey $3 million just to go away. And sometimes you got to think what's the cost benefit. Like sometimes you just got to cut your losses. But also, kind of a joke I made, they are going to make here as I blow it. They're scheduling Texas A&M again. $1.6 million, school record. Use that toward the buyout. Is that why they signed that game?
Well, okay, so I wanted to look this up, and someone out there can correct me if I'm wrong, but I guess the buyout is about $750,000.
I thought it was more than that.
Well, I'm thinking look too far into this.
Maybe I'm mixing it up with Stacey's thing. Maybe I'm mixing those two up.
Well, I have no idea how credible this site is, hkm.com, but it does say that the buyout clause requires a 30-day notice and up to $760,000, depending upon the year of resignation. So,
well, could
make of that what you will.
Suspension be start of that? Okay, here we go. I went to USA Today. They have as of 12/1/17, so it's the most recent. Mm-hmm. They have for Bob Davey, come on, 1.72 as of 12/1.
That's a lot.
So, I'm not far off if they get that money from Texas A&M. buyout, but for them, for a program that needs money, and like his salary right now is only that. I guess he has 2 years left on his deal because the salary is about $822 mm-hmm. base, so it's basically 2 years, probably 3 years left because typically you don't get the full amount once you get to that back end. But I don't know if he'll be there because it's just unacceptable to do stuff like that. It's like, again, yelling, being aggressive, and getting in players' face, do stuff, but he doesn't coach. Like, honestly, the reason they've been good is Bob, when they had the guy from DeBessie. Mm-hmm. It was his offense. That's the reason they were good. You know what I mean? Like, that unique offense nobody ran in the country by a long shot. And that's part of the reason they were successful.
Yeah, and I mean, and when you look at exactly what kind of experience they're bringing back this year, and this is, you know, an allusion to something we've talked about in one of our prior podcasts as far as returning production, you know, at least by some of the measures used by Bill Connolly over at SB Nation, their returning production ranks in the triple digits. So it's not as though, you know, just, you know, biting the bullet and letting him go is going to be a huge deal, because if you can bring in a guy who can, you know, maybe they bought him out in 2018, but if they can put together one or two decent recruiting classes going forward, you know, the production they have coming back from last year, you know, it isn't necessarily a Bob Davie team anymore. It's not, there's not a lot of veterans or anything like that. There are some key players that are returning, but I think on the whole, it's a young team that maybe could benefit from a regime change.
It could, because like the running game took a step back this past year. It's still good, but just not overly amazing like it has been the past couple years. But so maybe, and they have a new quarterback, sort of a new quarterback, as we mentioned. But that could be a thing to go. But like if they get rid of Davey, are they just gonna have to promote within? Because they're not gonna find a new coach now. It's not like they're gonna pull Illinois and get Lovie Smith or something.
I think they would kind of have to.
What, promote from within?
Yeah, I think that they would, and they have Kevin Cosgrove acting as the interim guy right now,
It'd be
right?
him. Yeah, the defensive coordinator would take over. And just for reference, real quick, Lobos were 12th this past year in recruiting composite from 24/7.
And I mean, I think that that would probably be the way to go if they do decide to do that, because you know he's the guy who's been on the staff for several years now. And, you know, he's a guy who's been around the coaching ranks for quite a while. So even if it's not, you know, the ideal kind of transition, I think it is something that would work out for both sides, at least in the interim.
Yeah, and so it's an interesting thing. It's I don't know, because they also have other messes too, like the Lobos, like AD, the stuff with Krebs, with the Scotland trip where golf for free or some people to pay. And it's like, again, the dream style deal for the football and basketball arena. There's a lot of mess going on. There's some things about, I guess, the former president's trying to get some job at UCF, and they some I forget exactly what it was. I just brought on my mind after thinking of a few tweets I saw. Information about what's probably not good to work in Mexico, and we see them needing money from the university. And so, I don't know, we'll see how it works out. But, I guess let's go ahead. Let me mark it here. We'll take a quick timeout because please listen to the next 60 seconds because you'll be our best friends. All right, let's get to kind of early previews. Do we like advanced stats numbers because we're those type of people?
Well, I can't speak for anybody else, but I like the advanced numbers.
So do I. So here's where we're going to do the rest of the show. Off season, well, some fun stuff. We'll do our March shredness. I guess we got to do that next week, right? Or this week.
In case anybody's wondering, yeah, the tournament starts on March 1st, so we're gonna have to figure out time to do that next week.
Today's the 23rd, right?
It's the 22nd.
We'll figure something out. We got to
When
bring.
we're recording, it's the 22nd.
Yeah, we will. Oh, man, we'll figure it out. That's no time to do on-air stuff now because I just realized there's only I forget 28 days in February.
Life February comes at you fast.
It does. We'll figure it out, but we'll talk about March Shrednist. I'll take out a show, but we'll look ahead. We're going to look at ESPN's FPI and SB Nation Bill Connolly, who's already doing his countdown to 130. So if you're a Boise fan, go check out the Troy preview because he's a machine. I don't think he's human, but we'll see. I never had him tested. For or pricked his blood, so I don't know if it's true or not. To see if the machine bleeds. But all right, so what numbers do you like better, FPI or S&P Plus? Do you have a preference?
I'm not gonna lie, I don't know much about ESPN's FPI. I trust S&P a little bit more just because, you know, as someone who's been buying the Football Outsiders almanac year after year for nearly a decade now, almost, you know, to me, that's the way that I prefer to look at it. But it's not to say that ESPN's metric is totally useless, because I think there is something to be said for how simulations can look at something.
I also think with S&P Plus, he gives you all the info out there. He tells you everything that's being considered. The FPI, here's the exact thing. The Football Power Index is a measure of team strength that is meant to be the best predictor of a team's performance going forward for the rest of the year. FPI does 10,000 simulations for projected results. It's updated daily for the remaining schedule. Sorry, FPI results to date. And the remaining schedule ratings and projections are updated daily. Obviously, once the season begins, they'll probably or will update after spring with transfers, injuries, QB guys. So it's I don't know. They're both fine to use. That's like we say at the drafting, and you want more info than less info, right?
Exactly.
And looking at the worst team. Okay, one quick note: why I'm skeptical of FPI. ESPN also has a BPI. And when I play a game, if you hear a basketball podcast, it might be your favorite part because it's my favorite. I play Guess the BPI with Eli. He's never right. It's so far off. No, he's gotten better the past couple, but like there are some that are just super head scratchers. Like there is one game, I think it was, you remember when Fresno beat Wyoming recently at Wyoming, Matt?
Yes, I do.
Fresno, because Wyoming's very good at home. They call it the Dome of Doom for a reason. Eli's like, as when Wyoming was, not before the recent struggles, but they were playing quite well after they beat, I think, Nevada. And I think it's directly after the Nevada game. So they're beating a ranked team, doing extremely well. And so Eli's like, 80% Wyoming. Somehow Fresno was like a 68% favorite on the road against Wyoming to one. So they know something, but the numbers are weird. So that's why I always give a second, I think give a second eyeball or a second look at the FPI. So does it surprise you San Jose State's last in the FPI? Is that any shock to you whatsoever?
I am shocked.
You mean you're not shocked, face?
I'm not shocked.
But you know what's even more shocking? They're not the lowest. S&P Plus does not have San Jose State at the bottom.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't. Hawaii.
No, Hawaii is right above them.
No, Hawaii's below. Hawaii's 114 in S&P Plus.
Wait a minute. That's not right.
I got the link from you, so you better have the right one.
Yes. Oh, wait. Never mind. Wait, no. That's not right.
Yes.
It was because I'm looking at it and San Jose State's 129th. They're like next to last in the entire FBS.
Are you looking at returning production?
No, I'm not. Far as returning production is concerned, they are dead last.
I apologize. I'm looking at the five. You got me. I'm like, this is 2018 February. It's Bill Connolly's 5-year ranking.
Yes.
Let me go to the right link here. Sorry about that. So, okay, we don't care about San Jose State, even though we probably should a little bit.
I still have hope for the Spartans. I still think that they have interesting pieces on both sides of the ball. To me, a lot of it, and we'll probably talk about this more as we start getting back into team previews, you know, later in the offseason, turnovers. Turnovers, I think, is going to, you know, avoiding turnovers is going to fuel a lot of the growth that the team is going to make next year.
Yeah, and Montel Aaron at the quarterback, he looked pretty good at times. So we'll see how they go. But I blew us off there. But a couple of things I noticed about the S&P Plus. Again, Fresno's getting disrespected, I think. So let me ask you this, because we know what S&P Plus contains. It's like returning talent. They have a part of it. I think they're down because the weighted 5-year average is part of it. Because Fresno had, two really bad years a couple years ago. They had the one-win season. And what were they the year before, like 5 wins or something?
They were 3-9 the year before. They were 1-11.
So their 5-year average is 100, which has to be knocking them down because they're sitting at 44 behind Boise State. They are sitting at 95 in recruiting impact, which is do you know if that includes a 5-year thing or is that current? Because they've been recruiting reasonably well.
So if you don't have the article in front of you, the recruit, I think it's 2016, 2017.
Okay.
Or it's 2017, 2018. I forget which one. That makes up about 25%.
But I thought they did good. And then returning production. Right? Wasn't it his first year recruiting when?
Well, I think they ended up ranking third or fourth in the conference the first year.
Okay.
And then this, with this most recent class, I think they ended up fifth. So it's good, but it's not great, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And that makes up about a quarter of the projection. And then the lion's share actually comes down to returning production. You know, that is the area where, you know, Fresno State really shines relative to the other two because, you know, as we talked about in the prior podcast, they're in the top 20 in that regard. That counts for about half of S&P Plus. And then the last share, like you said, goes down to weighted 5 years. And that is basically the 5 years from what, 2017, 16, 15, 14, 13.
So it does not include that 11-year, 12-year win or 12-1-year Derek Carr anymore.
If it's 2013, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13. So it would.
Oh, okay. Because we talked about on Twitter, you're upset a little bit we brought up David Fails.
Well, yeah, that's because I'm still not over that game.
You shouldn't be. You should not be.
I'm not. But that, so that when they talk about recent history, they're talking about 2013 to 17. So with a team like Fresno State, for instance, you know, you have the peak of 2013, but then, you know, it's basically 4 years of diminishing returns before the turnaround last year. So I think that, you know, that little bit of a boomerang effect hasn't quite caught up with the rankings. So while they, you know, they rank 100th in that regard, that might be dragging the overall ranking down a little bit. But even so, they're 44th overall in S&P Plus, which I don't think is too much of an insult, because when you look at the number of group of five teams that are ahead of them, Boise State's at the top. That's really no
Well, Central
surprise.
Florida, actually, 17.
Well, I mean, as far as Mountain West
Oh,
teams,
gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Yes.
Boise State's right there at 26. That's not a surprise. They deserve to be there. You know, and then Central Florida's up there. And then I think the only other team, or actually there's two other teams. There's Florida Atlantic, which is just outside the top 30. And then there's Memphis, which is two spots ahead of the Bulldogs. So when you're talking about, you know, top 40 team, you can reframe it to be like, this is a top five group of five team. And I think that that sounds about right.
And that's why we said, like, last week, you or last time we recorded, you and me together talking early 20 top 25. Like, you think Aztecs, Fresno, and Boise could be all ranked preseason or at some point, or no,
I do.
preseason, you said, correct?
I do think that there's a possibility, yes.
And so the schedule hasn't come out yet because the Mountain West is weird. We'll talk about one quirk of the schedule at the end of the show, but that's supposed to be released sometime in March. I think typically it's been April. But it seems like Conference USA and Sunbelt, everybody's been moving up the schedule release. The Mountain West seems like to be well behind. But we know who's playing. And we know Fresno's going to Boise. We know who's playing who. Boise's playing San Diego State and the Blue Turf, I believe. Yeah, you got who's Fresno's cross games? Is it Utah State and Air Force?
No, they're same as last year. Away against Boise,
Oh,
home
yeah,
versus
Boise. I
Wyoming.
just said Boise. Never mind. Jeez. So, okay, let me ask you this because we'll get to FPI, but who would you say is the most underrated team in S&P Plus?
So now I got to think about this for a minute, because
I got my answer right now. I got it right on the top.
I feel like there's a compelling argument to say that maybe San Diego State's a little bit underrated. Like, they are losing some significant pieces, which could make or break the team. You know, the Union Tribune recently noted that, you know, one of the big things we'll have to work out in the spring is replacing two people in their secondary. And that's easier said than done. They did it once, but to do it again is, you know, a whole other feat.
Yeah, but they got a freshman All-American stepping in again. Come on.
Another one, though?
No, I mean the current from this past year. Was it
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like,
yeah.
can they find another Tariq Thompson? So I mean, I feel like there's an argument to be made that maybe the Aztecs, even though they're third overall, maybe a little bit underrated. But I also kind of wonder about UNLV,
Okay.
because, you know, because, you know, in the same way that we just talked about with San Jose State, obviously the Rebels are ahead of where the Spartans are in their rebuilding process. They're probably on the cusp of bowl contention. They have a young quarterback who we've seen, you know, what he can do in flashes, and there was a little bit of inconsistency in his first year as a starter. But even though they're losing DeVonte Boyd, they do have a young and talented, you know, offense at the skill positions around him. They do have a steady offensive line in front of them, and if the defense can take a step forward, I feel like they definitely will, you know. You know, obviously, playing USC in non-conference play is kind of a non-starter, but, you know, if they can rack up some early wins, I think that they could definitely beat their preseason projection, which right now is 105th.
I think they could too. I think the big game non-conference is at Arkansas State.
Yes.
Because UTEP has a new coach. They're pretty down for again this year. They should again emphasis on should air quotes bold italicized underlined should beat Prairie View A&M. But again, Howard happened last year. But I think at Arkansas State, they're about top three Sun Belt team, probably. They've been pretty good. Remember, Brian Harsin there, Hugh Freeze, all these guys were winning conference titles there at Arkansas State and Sun Belt. So they're still a team that can do something. So my team, it's going to be here's my bandwagon team. My underdog team's Nevada. I'm all in on Nevada being the underdog team.
All
Remember,
right.
I picked them to pick be the non-Aztec Bulldog West Division stupid upset pick contender.
This is true.
And all I gotta do, I guess it's not easier said than done, but get that defense a bit better. But man, just let the offense rip it. Find a decent running game. They have a Vital's, was it younger brother or cousin or something, come into the team as a running back? Or Tua
Yeah.
Tau? Is it Tua Tau?
Toa Tua, I believe.
Tua Tua, sorry, backwards. But that's my team because at the end of the year, like we talked about it last week, last time we did our early preview stuff, a different angle on it, they put up points, they put scares in all these teams. I'm saying Nevada is going to be vastly underrated.
I think a lot of it is going to depend on how well they start the season, because, you know, we saw the defense make a little bit of progress, but I think that it's fair to say that that's the big question going into spring ball is, can the defense continue to progress in their first year in the 3-3-5? But, you know, if you want to look at opponents, S&P Plus, for instance, you know, beating Oregon is going to be a really tall task.
Oregon
You know,
State, actually. Oregon State.
Oh, is it Oregon State?
At home, Oregon State.
Oh, I was looking
very
at
winnable.
I was looking at 2019.
Oh, boy.
Excuse me.
Hey, 4-0. I'm calling it 4-0 non-league play. They're 4-0.
So you think they're gonna beat Toledo?
They don't have Logan Woodside anymore.
They still have a very good team. They're top 50 far as S&P plus.
I would not be surprised. Let me put it that way.
I mean, I think that there's definitely a couple of coin flips because I think that the offense has a chance to be really potent. But, you know, Vanderbilt, for instance, you know, they don't blow anybody away with what they do in the SEC, but they did have a pretty good defense last year, which I think would be, I think when all is said and done, it'll probably end up making for a really interesting matchup of contrast to styles. But yeah, you're definitely right. They're going to have to win one of those two games on the road, either Vanderbilt or Toledo, to really, you know, build some momentum and beat that ranking.
Yeah, those are swing games. Toledo, not because of the road games, but they're still good teams. But yeah, I think 2-2 is reasonable. But I honestly, I'm not just saying this just to butter up Wolfpack fans, but I don't like the way their offense played. Why can't they? Before, if their defense is just, it's like we said with New Mexico a couple years ago, or maybe even last year. If the defense can be just okay, their offense can do the rest. Is there a team that, or do you have one more thing to add on that?
Well, and let's not. Road to Northwestern and beat the Wilds. And so, you know, that was when, you know, the offense was a little more earlier in the year. So it's not outside the realm of possibility that they could go on the road and beat someone.
We'll see. Is there a team, let's go the other way, like is Air Force way too low for you? Or is Hawaii too high now they don't have Drew Brown? Is Oklahoma State? Any of those make any difference?
I kind of have
you?
Some serious questions about Hawaii.
Like, are they going to be Mountain West
because...
in 2 years?
No, yeah, they're going to... let's not get into that.
Sorry,
but,
guys.
I mean, they're replacing their quarterback. They're replacing their running back. They're replacing their top defender in the secondary. You know, they're replacing a couple of critical pieces along the defensive line. And obviously, a lot of that will probably get sorted out in the spring ball, but... At this point, it seems kind of worrisome that what looked like a very potent offense 2 years ago now has a serious amount of questions.
Because quarterback, I don't know who it's going to be. Like you said, and they also lost the receiver, Dylan Colley. And will John Osura be healthy from his ACL? So there's like 1,000 questions.
Exactly.
I think it's too early to tell what they'll do. Losing Drew Brown, who was reasonably good. And honestly, when he goes to Oklahoma State, he could win the starting job and be one of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12. Because we've seen him be very good with Hawaii. When he'd like John Ursula, like that's as good as having like when Oklahoma State had James Washington last year. That's that type of talent. Not that obviously Washington's gone to the NFL, but if he finds a good go-to guy in that offense, he could be a threat. Like when Boise plays Oklahoma State, that could be an interesting game when they meet up this year.
And even if, you know, the quarterback situation takes a little while to get sorted out, I think one of the things that Warriors fans can be encouraged by is, you know, they ended up finishing in the middle of the pack as far as, you know, 2018 recruiting. And among their big gets was, you know, a couple of three-star receivers. So maybe one of those two guys, whether it's Jonah Pinoke or Michael Washington, maybe if they can sneak in and carve themselves out a little bit of a role that can make whoever ends up under center their life a little bit easier. I'm not totally sure whether Nick Rolovich would go in that direction. But I know that at the end of last year, I was kind of wondering, okay, well, who on the outside is going to catch passes? And maybe that influx of new young talent is the answer that they need.
Okay. All right, let's move to ESPN's FPI really quick. They actually have win-loss predictions, which is interesting. I should look at this more, but they have here's real quick for this playing at home: 41 Boise, 51 or San Diego State, excuse me, 51 San Diego State, 60 Fresno. They have three teams with double-digit victories: Boise 11,
That's fair.
San Diego State 10, Fresno 10-4. I guess conference title. I guess we're assuming Fresno to win the division. Yeah.
Are they, though? Because the Aztecs are ahead of them.
Well, no, but the 14 games.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And they have Boise as the conference champ, which, not shock, but three loss. Like, if you're looking at Boise State, what are the three losses?
That's an excellent question. I don't have their schedule in front of me right
I
now.
have it right here. They have, remember the Oklahoma State game. You can't forget that. We don't have the exact schedule, obviously, because of league games, but we know non-conference, they host BYU. BYU's nothing special this year. They're still having issues. I guess at Oklahoma State and what losing, would they really lose to Fresno at home? I guess losing to Fresno and San Diego State?
I
And
mean, I guess if I had to choose, that game against Fresno is likely to be a slugfest one way or the other.
yeah, but.
I mean, because they do get the Aztecs at home too, so it's not as though the road to the championship game is going to be all that easy.
True.
But yeah, I mean, at first glance, if you're saying three losses, it's kind of hard to pick three.
Those would be my three, though: Fresno, Aztecs, and at Oklahoma State.
But I wouldn't feel overwhelmingly confident in any of those.
No, I get your point. Yeah. Either way, they can go either way.
Yeah.
It's just kind of interesting looking through. I'm kind of surprised. What do we make of Utah State? Because they're sitting at 85. Are they the team, like, they made a bowl game last year? They almost won. I'll probably say it's all off season. I have no clue what to expect from them. My expectations are basically whatever. If they go 10-2, I'd be mildly surprised. If they go 2-10, I'd be mildly surprised.
Well, they don't return quite the same amount of talent, or they're quite the same amount of production, rather, that a team like Boise or Fresno State does. But they do rank above the FBS average in that regard. And one of the things I noticed in an article, I think it's from HJ News. What is that?
Herald Journal
It's our
News.
friend Jason. Yeah, from our compadre Jason Turner.
Local,
And
yeah,
he
up in
mentioned that
Lawrenceville, yeah.
They have 18 starters coming back, and that they had 37 different guys play at least or start at least one game for the Aggies in the past. So, if it was a little bit uneven last year, I don't think that that was necessarily, I don't know that this necessarily leads to a message of doom and gloom, if that makes sense, because maybe they have their quarterback situation figured out. Jordan Love is obviously going to be the front runner for the starting job. And all of a sudden, they have a nice collection of talent around him. They do have Dax Raymond, who, now that Jake Rowe is gone, might be the best tight end in the conference. They still have Ronquavion Tarver. They have a couple of younger guys like Gerald Bright and Jordan Nathan, who came on strong at the end of last year. And they have a defense where, even if there's no real household names, they have a lot of solid contributors coming back. And if they can grow together as a veteran defense, they could make some noise.
They obviously could. It's just that the past couple of years I've just been whatever emoji, because it's I get the quarterback's been weird, issue's been weird. They lose Jalen Davis, like you said, the other guys are coming back and losing, but I don't know. They're just a team. I'm not going to be surprised either way. So one thing we forgot to mention: Fresno State loses a key coach to the CFL. Is that what's up with that?
They're losing him back to the
Back
CFL,
okay, back to the CFL.
which is even weirder. That
So
never happens to anybody. I mean, we know all about the fact that, a lot of Group of Five teams, yeah, coach is there for 1 year and then he's on to a Power Five program. I have never seen, and you can correct me on this, but I've never seen someone come from the CFL to take a coordinator position and then go back to the CFL.
to be the assistant head coach.
I'm pretty sure that's never happened anywhere ever.
How's it going to impact Fresno State?
That's an excellent question, because on the one hand, they have a tremendous amount of talent coming back on the defensive side of the ball. So it's not as though that's going to be the problem. To me, I think it's a matter of finding some kind of continuity. Because obviously making the switch to the 4-3 worked wonders for the talent that they had on hand. And I think that they're probably going to want to find someone who can run that similar kind of defense. And some of the names I've been seeing so far are kind of the names that you'd expect if you're a Fresno State guy. JD Williams is one guy. Tim Skipper is another guy. Corey Hall, who was most recently Oregon State, all former Fresno State guys, as you might suspect. But Tedford went a little bit outside of the box in to bring Steinauer in, so it'll be interesting to see if he makes use of one of his kind of, not necessarily Valley connections, but one of the connections that he's made elsewhere, whether it was at Washington or Cal or up in Canada or
Well, he already
something
had him. He
else.
already had a guy from Canada. That was Orlando.
Well, maybe he knows another guy in Canada. I don't
Maybe
know.
Orlando Steiner. Yeah, he's a. It's just weird. Like assistant head coach. Like, is he really getting more pay? Is it pay issue? Is it? I don't know. What's? It's weird.
Well, one thing I came across, and I closed the tab for whatever reason, but the interesting website called Three Down Nation,
Okay. Good find.
which I assume is all about the CFL. But one of the things that they mentioned was the fact that the guy who's up there now, June Jones,
June Jones.
and it's funny because when I saw the news earlier, I exclaimed a little bit of surprise, and then someone replied, "June Jones loves to screw Fresno State," and I wish I had thought of that before someone else had. But June Jones, I think, is in his mid-60s, and Steinauer is just still relatively young. He's 44 years old, and what the article, and I'll just throw it out there, it's from someone named Drew Edwards. His family's still up there. His family grew up there. He's not the defensive coordinator anymore. Apparently, Jerry Glanville is the defensive coordinator at Hamilton.
Jerry Glanville, jeez, who are these guys they bring into Canada? Oh
Or that
man.
he will be the defensive coordinator up there. But Steinauer is not the defensive coordinator the way that he was before. He's the assistant head coach. So maybe it is a situation where he's the heir apparent to take over up there. It's a place that he likes. It's a place that he's comfortable in. It's a place that his family likes. So it's really hard to kind of fault him for that.
Here's a quick speculation. I found the article from this a commenter. Should I give him a shout out? Quint is her name on the comment board over there. Because his salary at Fresno was about 310. So there's speculation salary will be on par with the CFL head coach, which is just above 400K. I assume that's American. I don't know. It's a Canadian website, so we'll see. But yeah, whatever. But 100,000 increase and guaranteed to be next head coach for the Ticats. And it mentioned something to do with his family, and so you mentioned that. So it's maybe it's just a family thing, and it's a good job. You would be head coach if you're making $500,000 almost a year to be a CFL head coach. Why not?
I think what just made me the most is the fact that like every single Ticats fan who was responding to the announcement overwhelmingly stoked. And so I was like, oh man.
Well, I don't know. It's like, whoa, look at CFL go. Actually lured somebody away from a Division I program back to Canada. Interesting. Okay. These are nice comments. I like these. Maybe I'll check out this site more often. Did you notice the CFL is a negotiation list? Did you see that floating on
I
Twitter
have
the other
no
day?
idea what that is.
Somebody from, maybe it was guys from ESPN 99 in Boise, I think it was tweeted out because I guess each team can negotiate, have 10 players on a negotiation list. And one included Brett Rypien. Which
Yeah.
and one actually also included, there's like four Mountain West players. The other one I saw, Brian Hill, who I think is on the practice squad with the Bengals. So they got drafted by the Falcons. It's just weird, like, okay, negotiation list, what does that mean? I guess it's the Americans you can have. I don't know, because I know there's a limit of U.S. players. Like, if you go to any foreign league, you can only have a couple American or non-foreign players or something. But I don't know. That's a so you just think they're going to promote from within? Does that seem most likely?
That's a. I mean, I'm not totally sure. Like I said, a lot of the names have been bandied about are former Fresno State guys. I'm not sure who they would promote from within, off the top of my head.
We'll see, because he could also get that 10th head assistant coach. So, and also, who would they get unless they lure somebody from a position coach or something, but it's just odd timing too.
I said, they mentioned Tim Skipper. Maybe they give Tim Skipper the Zach Hill treatment.
Is DeRuiter available? He's over at Cal, right? Can he come back up north or down south?
I think he's probably a little too expensive and a little too not well-liked.
You can say hated. It's okay.
He's not well-liked.
Okay. I'll let you leave with well-liked. I think we're good. We've gone an hour. I don't think there's anything else we should mention. Oh, one thing we should mention super quick. How do you feel about week zero conference football, Matt?
Pro. It means more football sooner.
Hawaii, reportedly by the Hawaii Star advertiser, Hawaii's moving a game to face CSU on the mainland August 25th to give Hawaii a bye week. Similar to what CSU did last year, so they didn't have to play 13-13, and they moved the Oregon State game up a couple weeks. So why not? I believe
I am totally ready.
That gives an extra game of week zero because you have Wyoming playing as well. I think it gives us – I bet there could be one or two more that switch maybe because that seemed to happen late. Like there's those international games. But there's at least, I think, three or four games at the moment. So more football and more eyeballs and a league game. That's got to be something, right? That's got to be a few more eyeballs to pay attention to Fort Collins.
Well, how do you think Hawaii feels that they don't have to travel halfway around the world to open a season anymore?
I don't know. Australia's a pretty good place to go to. But I guess you're in Hawaii, so what's the deal, right?
Exactly.
You're already there. And one thing I noted, like some people, I think it's Underdog Dynasty guys over there, like, hey, Navy travels X amount of miles. I'm like, well, if you take away that Hawaii road trip, it's not as impressive as you make it seem. But it's still a lot of miles.
I kind of wonder when the last time Hawaii didn't lead the FBS in miles traveled.
I probably can answer it for you. There were some game BYU at one point. Yes, I'll bring BYU into the discussion. They played a game in Japan, and I think it was not there because there's been a few Japanese games. Maybe that's something we should look into. That may take a while. I don't know how we do that, but that'd take a long time. But there's been a few college football games in Japan, so I'm betting. I think I'm gonna look it up real quick. I think they played in the 80s. But I bet include one of those teams who played in Japan. That would probably make the most sense, right? That's a non-West Coast team.
Gotcha.
So maybe we'll look into that a little bit later. But I think it's a good place to end when we're talking Japanese football. Unless you have any last-second things to add, are we good?
I think we're good to go.
Hold on. Wait. Did you know? I'm going to go down the rabbit hole for a minute here, just with us as we finish the show out here. The very first international college football game, Harvard versus McGill, played in Canada, 1874.
I did not know that.
Montreal, Canada. Let's see. They got the Cuba games. That could be something. Tulane went to Cuba. Mississippi A&M went to Havana as well in 1912, before the embargo, I believe. Trying to see Canada. A lot of Cuba games. Ole Miss went to Cuba. That's not too far, though, really. Villanova to Cuba. That's a decent travel. Let's see. Hold on. Where's Japan? Wait. Whoa. Hold on. Oh, dang. It's like a D2 school. There's a game in West Berlin, Germany.
Interesting.
In technically West Germany, not even Germany. You have game. It's all Texas A&I, whoever that is. Texas A&I and Henderson State. This is very interesting. They played. This needs to be something needs to be done about this. June 1st, 1976, June 5th, 1976, June 12th, 1976, two other games in 1976 in June. Texas A&I played Henderson State five times, West Berlin, Vienna, Mannheim, Nuremberg, and Paris.
Just FYI, Texas A&I is now known as Texas A&M Kingsville.
Oh, I know exactly where that is. That's the NAIA school.
Because I just Google searched Texas A&I, and that's what came up. So there you go.
I think
the Javelinas. I wonder if they were known as the Javelinas back then. That would have been wild.
Did you know Utah? This is fun. Utah State, Idaho State played in Japan.
That's fascinating.
Okay,
we got to get Ryan to write an article about that.
We need to talk to Ryan Swanson. Okay, here's the BYU UNLV. this is insane. Okay, I think I have an answer for us here. Who probably traveled the most? There's an Army Montana game in Japan. What the heck is up in Japan in the 80s? So I think I found our contenders. Temple and Boston College played in Tokyo. Miami of Florida played Notre Dame in Tokyo.
Okay.
So I can see that I need that 1979 Miami football team could have some serious travel. Independent Miami team, not Big East Miami. So I think we're done. This is way farther down we want to talk to about this stuff, but you're welcome, right? That's what you get.
Thank you for listening to Mountain West Wire, your number one international college football podcast.
Reddit CFB would be proud.
You're never going to get this information anywhere else.
Nowhere else, but thanks.
This is why you love us.
This is why you listen to Hour of 65 in February talking college football. So thanks for joining. We obviously appreciate it. If you can give us the, if you listen to the end, put in, guess we don't have comments on our site, but go to our Facebook page and Mountain West Wire. Give us a comment of your favorite game we mentioned internationally if you listen to the end. That'd be interesting to see who actually did not abandon the podcast at hour 42 or something, or minute 42. But that's it for us. MWWire.com is our website. iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn. Anywhere you can purchase good podcasts, that's where we're at. And we'll be back next week with some sort of football podcast. And yeah, later, folks.